Welcome to Journey to the Sunny Side, the podcast where we have thoughtful conversations to explore the science of habits, uncover the secrets to mindful living, and of course, inspire your own mindful drinking journey. This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform. And if you could benefit from drinking a bit less, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. I'm your host, Mike Hardenbrook, published author, neuroscience enthusiast, and habit change expert. Today, I'm speaking with Victoria Waters from Dry Atlas about the rise of the non-alcoholic beverage. Victoria shares insights from her extensive data on craft brands and the increasing interest from big alcohol companies. We'll discuss what this trend means for consumers looking for more choices and how it's influencing the future of drinking. So tune in for a conversation on what may be coming to a store near you. Okay, today I'm here with Victoria Waters. Victoria, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, well, let's just start a little bit about you. Can you tell us about where you're from, where you live now, and maybe something that you're really passionate about this month?
Sure. So I have spent the last 10 years in New York City. Right now, I am speaking to you from Nicaragua because for the past year, my husband and I have been traveling the world, exploring all the best non-alcoholic beverage brands worldwide. And we're almost finished that tour with our last stop here in Central America. So New York, my whole career, it's, you know, my favorite city in the world. It's a great city for mindful drinkers. And I've just learned so much exploring around the world as we have for the past year. Right now, I'm most excited about everything that we're building at Dry Atlas, which is my media company dedicated to alcohol alternatives. On a personal level, I've just had such a wonderful time traveling around and surfing around the world as well. So that's something that I've been really enjoying lately.
Oh, I love it. And you know what? I had no idea you were in Nicaragua because guess what? By coincidence, I actually lived in Nicaragua for a little while.
Oh, really? Well, it's a gorgeous place. You're very lucky. What brought you there?
Oh, I was doing the four-hour work thing in my 20s and I was surfing and traveling with a laptop. And actually, mostly when I wasn't doing that, I was either drinking Tonya or Victoria, the two main beer brands. So you got to tell me about the non-alcoholic there because I know very little about it since I was there in my 20s. How has that been?
Yeah, I have to say, and I have to admit that probably this leg of the trip for me is more about the surfing than it is about meeting with beverage brands. We did a lot of that in Europe and Asia. We did have a Victoria beer the other night. I had to try it, of course. On the non-alc side, there are some really great non-alcoholic flavored seltzers, but we did have to import some bitters from my favorite brand, All the Bitter, which does alcohol-free bitters. So if we could just mix it with soda water here, because the options are pretty limited.
So are you in San Juan de Sur?
Yes.
Okay. Well, remind me after to connect you with a friend of mine who has the biggest catamaran in the bay there, and maybe he had something set up for you.
Nice. Will do.
Well, speaking of drinking, I read that you're something called a flex drinker, which I want to talk about. But before we do that, why don't you share, since you're in this world of alcohol and non-alcoholic beverages, share like your journey that brought you to that around alcohol?
Sure. So revisiting alcohol for me started around 4 years ago, which was right before my husband opened Spirited Away, which is America's first booze-free bottle shop. And that venture was born out of our own search for alcohol alternatives. We saw brands like Seedlip hitting the market, but they were really hard to find, even in New York City stores. In the pandemic, my husband was mixing us a daily cocktail, not something that I'd ever been used to, frankly, drinking daily. But even that one cocktail per day started to make us feel a little groggy and like we wanted to keep the ritual, but just revisit what was going into it. And he and I went to Astor Wine and Spirits, which for non-New Yorkers is just an enormous liquor store, sure that we would find Seedlip and maybe some other options, but we were shocked to understand that in New York City, it's actually illegal for liquor stores to sell non-alcoholic products, aside from
really
some special religious non-alcoholic wine. It's a funny kind of holdover from just the crazy liquor laws that we have here in America. So we decided that it was time for a dedicated space for these products that were hitting the market. And thanks to the pandemic and its effect on retail prices, we were able to open a store with really no risk from a capital intensivity perspective. And we decided that it was going to be Douglas who opened the first bottle shop that's dedicated to the Seedlips and more of the world. And we opened in November 2020 with maybe 24 products on our shelves. And today we have over 250. And there are over 1,300 on the market globally. So the space has exploded since then. But our personal interest in it was just looking to maintain the ritual of a cocktail, a nice way to punctuate the day, but without the downsides of alcohol that we were feeling, just from a health perspective and sleep quality. And since then, we've obviously fallen in love with the space. We launched Dry Atlas as a sister business, as a media company to help people understand the 1,300 plus options that are on the market. So even if you're not a New Yorker, even if you can't come to Spirited Away, you can understand a little bit more about what are non-alcoholic spirits, wines and beers, how can you use them, how can you enjoy them. And from a daily habits perspective, you're right, I am what I would call a flex drinker today. I define that as someone who is probably equally likely to have an alcoholic cocktail or a non-alcoholic one. And for me, it really just depends on a few factors that need to align for me to be interested in drinking an alcoholic cocktail. I need to make sure I'm not getting up early the next morning. I need to make sure that I don't have a lot of productivity needs the next day. And it needs to be a really well-crafted cocktail for me. The bar is just higher as to what I'll enjoy these days. But frankly, lately with all of the non-alcoholic options that are on the market, I'm finding fewer and fewer reasons to be drinking alcohol, just with its effect on my sleep in particular. So I would say I'm probably down to maybe 2 or 3 drinks a month at this point without being too conscious of it. It's just that the bar is higher and I'm not finding that many drinking occasions for alcohol these days.
Yeah, this is all great. I mean, you were really early on, and I, as far as like the bottle and the non-alcoholic shop, and I would be lying to say it, that's not something that it's something I haven't ever thought about, because, you know, I just, when I started becoming more mindful around it, it just like seemed like such a no-brainer, because there really isn't any options. I had no idea about the legal reasons behind that. In comparison to the mindful drinking was amazing that you got this kind of on your own, and it was 4 years. So it's before, like, you know, Sunnyside really started to try and start to educate the market, and same with many others who are starting to speak out and say, hey, you know, like, we need to actually take healthier things around that. Sorry. I'm going to pause for a second, 'cause I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. I wanted to go into the drinks. So can we talk about like the actual drinks?
Sure, that we offer at the store.
All right. So you had the mindful drinking in mind, and you have this expertise knowledge around the products. I'm really curious to learn a little bit about non-alcoholic drinks. I read on the website things like bitters. I've heard that gives it a bite or more alcoholic taste. I think it's called shrubs, was it? Maybe something like that. And I'm really curious. So maybe, like, could you talk a little bit about the product lines? Like, what's like new and innovative? And maybe even, are there any cocktails that you think rival the alcoholic version of them?
It's a great question. So to ground listeners in the category, I would say there are 4 buckets to what we would call alcohol alternatives. So first, that's non-alcoholic spirits. Second, it's wines. Third, beers. And fourth, ready to drink mocktails. So things that are coming in a can that are a little bit more elevated than just a daytime soft drink. And in the spirits category, you have lots of products that try to mimic a traditional alcoholic spirit. So that could be a tequila, a gin, or a rum. They're really innovating on the food science front to try and recreate the real experience of drinking alcohol, from the taste to the mouthfeel to how it performs in mixology. So that's an exciting subcategory for that reason. Also in spirits, you have what we would call novel spirits. So these are beverages that don't really have a reference in the traditional alcohol world, but bring that same level of craft and complexity that you would expect from an alcoholic beverage. So there are ones that are really based on a lot of concentrated botanicals. There are ones that are hemp-based or kava-based. So really just bringing a new kind of flavor to your palate that you really have to sip and see for yourself. It's quite hard to explain without that reference to traditional alcoholic beverages. Similarly, in wines, you've got everything from still reds, still whites, still rosés to sparkling variants of those. And then similar to the novel spirits, you have a subcategory that we call wine proxies. So these aren't de-alkalized wines like the others I've mentioned, but rather they're beverages that are built from the ground up to give a wine-like experience, but without starting as an alcoholic wine as the others are. And I would say that's one of my favorite subcategories within alcohol alternatives are the wine proxies. Beers, I think, are pretty straightforward and probably the most well-known and accessible side of the alcohol alternative space. You've got enormous brands like Athletic that are just doing huge volume in places like Whole Foods. But then you've got some really interesting craft brands that are taking a kind of more unique approach to the non-alcoholic beer space with flavor profiles that are pretty wacky and fun to try. And then on the ready-to-drink cocktail side, similar to spirits, you've got a lot of mocktails that are, you know, like a daiquiri or a dark and stormy or a margarita that you might know. And then there are some ready-to-drink spritzes, for example, that might be Aperol-like or Campari-like, but not exactly trying to replicate that experience. And then you mentioned bitters. I would say that's a category I love. It's one that doesn't fit so neatly into these four buckets I've just shared. But bitters, there are alcohol-free bitters, which are a really great way to elevate all of these beverages that I've just mentioned. Even wine, non-alcoholic wine, if you add a few dashes of alcohol-free bitters, that's a great way to add the complexity that you're looking for. And I personally love just a bitters and soda. It's my go-to order when I'm out at a bar and they don't have mocktails that aren't just juice-based concoctions. Bitters at bars typically have a low degree of alcohol content to them with a few dashes in a soda water. So that's not for someone who's strictly alcohol-free. But also I do have friends who bring their own alcohol-free bitters to the bar and just add it themselves to a seltzer, which I think is a pretty cool hack. So that's really the alcohol alternatives category. I think, you know, there are hundreds of brands now. Everyone's taking kind of their own unique path. So there's something for everyone. Maybe if you've tried a non-alcoholic spirit and thought, this doesn't taste like a tequila and I'm not interested in this, you might be interested in a novel spirit or maybe a non-alcoholic beer that is, in many cases to me, virtually undistinguishable from the alcoholic version.
Yeah, I love that. That's all great information, and a lot of it I don't know. And actually, it reminds me of a saying, you know, don't change a ritual, change the ingredient. And I don't remember who coined that, so apologies for not giving credit where credit's due. But not only is, like, I think a lot of people think, like, change the ingredient, so the ritual is, like, making a cocktail at home. But for me, it's really about, like, getting in the car, saying, okay, I'm going to take a break and do something. So before, it would just be, like, go to the wine store and pick something. Like, that was my ritual. It wasn't, like, getting the ingredients out. So having an actual physical location, I can repeat that ritual and sort of like satisfy that need by doing it. And not only that, the ritual comes in like coming in to the store, looking at the labels, being able to speak to somebody like you that's knowledgeable, like trying something different, taking it home, getting it ready. Like, I love all of that. So I think that not only, you know, are you providing good quality products, but you're also like kind of giving an outlet for somebody, an alternative ritual, not just an alternative ingredient. So I love that. I'd love to talk a little bit more about Dry Atlas, because you founded that with your husband. Can you share, and you talked a little bit about it here, but can you share a little bit about the story behind founding Dry Atlas and, you know, what, where it is today?
Sure. So Dry Atlas started in June of 2023 as a database of all of these types of beverages that we've been discussing, mostly in response to questions we were getting about the broader industry and what types of beverages were available beyond the ones that we've curated for our store. And we found that there was a lot of interest actually in just aggregating this industry that has exploded in the last few years. And beyond just a directory of products, we found that there was a real need for context for them and education about this space, which for us, having been in it for a few years, didn't feel like something that needed demystifying. But we also recognize that for the average consumer, the phrase non-alcoholic spirits still feels like an oxymoron. And so with Dry Atlas, we're on a mission to really normalize and demystify non-alcoholic options for consumers worldwide. So having an impact beyond Lower Manhattan, as we do with Spirited Away as a retail store. So what started as a directory in June has really blossomed into a niche media company that reaches 5 million people each year. And we're really excited about that next layer of consumer who hasn't really heard about this category, but is curious to learn more. And to your point about rituals, to understand that a lot of the drinking ritual is really about the ritual itself. It's not necessarily about the alcohol content. And you don't really come to realize that until you do find some fabulous non-alcoholic options that really fit your palate. And one thing we're really excited about with Dry Atlas is that discovery, is introducing people to products specifically. You know, we're, for whatever reason you come into being interested about non-alcoholic options, that's great. We welcome people who are mindful drinkers, flex drinkers, sober, and even people who might just consider themselves a typical drinker, but want to see what it's like to switch it up a little bit and see what it's like to have that ritual without the alcohol. And I think the idea of ritual is really important to touch on that a little bit more. We've done a little bit of research into just the brain science behind social drinking and everything that happens when you are out with friends and having a cocktail. And I'm no Andrew Huberman, but from what I've read, so much of our enjoyment of that moment has nothing to do with the ABV content of the beverage. So much happens in our brain, for example, when we hear the clinking of ice in the glass, when we see other people holding a glass. And there's a lot that you can achieve about that experience without the downsides of alcohol. And at Dry Atlas, we're really excited to help people discover that for themselves.
Yes, I love all of that. And it's so, that's so true. I mean, I'll even go back to what I said about ritual is that I guess I would say I'm a flex drinker by that definition. I've actually not come across that term, but by all definition and the way that you put it, I'll go very long periods without it. Then I'll maybe just like, you know, here and there or whatever, not a whole lot of thought, not a whole lot of planning. But in between that, sometimes I'll be at the store and I'll call my wife and say, are you sure you don't want a bottle of wine? Because she just does whatever she wants. And sometimes it's just so I can go do it for her. And I actually, by the time I bring it back, I get a little satisfaction out of it. So I love the awareness factor that you're doing that. And you mentioned that like this a movement that's exploding. Why do you think this mindful drinking, non-alcoholic products is such a fast moving movement right now?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's three factors converging at once. First, I think, of course, the pandemic, which was such a huge had such a huge effect on all aspects of consumer behavior. I think that was a big trigger for this movement because a lot of people started to reevaluate their overall life habits, their overall life satisfaction, at the same time that a lot of other people also started drinking more. And I would say with our daily cocktails, as I mentioned in the pandemic, that certainly was true for me, even though it was limited to just one drink a day. That was more than I typically had. And I wasn't feeling great. I think without the pandemic, I probably wouldn't have thought twice about my alcohol consumption because it was so moderate and so normal in my mind. So I think the pandemic had a lot of people revisiting themselves, revisiting their health. That's one.
I think people also in the pandemic got very vocal about the amount they were drinking with less shame. And people all sort of realized that you also are doing that as well. I mean, that comes to mind.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. I think we were a lot more communicative. We had a lot fewer distractions. So I think a lot of people were kind of flocking to the internet and sharing their experiences about really all aspects of their lives. And I think this was a key one for many in the pandemic. And then the second one is more on the tech side. But I think tech wearables like Oura Rings and Whoops really started to show people the effect actually on their body from even very moderate levels of drinking. And I think the most prevalent example here is sleep quality. And you have a lot of people on Twitter, for example, talking about and showing charts about, hey, I had one drink at 9 p.m. and look how this tanked my sleep quality. And so I think there's a bit of like the biohacker movement that's helped the non-alc movement in conjunction with the pandemic more broadly, having people reevaluate their habits. And then on that point, but more related to science, I think there's just more information now than ever about the true effects of alcohol on people's bodies. And I think you have, for example, Andrew Huberman as a really important force on this front. His podcast episode on alcohol was hugely viral. And he was quite clear as a neuroscientist that there is no level of drinking that we can consider completely safe. At the same time, I would say there's a huge difference between having one drink a week versus, you know, what the average moderate or heavy drinker is having. But I think information like that increasingly came to light. I think also, for example, articles in the New York Times showing how prior health research was really largely funded by, you guessed it, the alcohol companies. I think there's just an awakening in general that's happening out of the pandemic on a lot of aspects of life. So those three things, I think, came together really at a time that made it likely for people to start to have a big consumer shift. I would say that's the demand side. On the supply side, another thing we saw happening was really an increase in the technology that's available for de-alcoholizing beers and wines, an increase in the craft in terms of the novel spirits and the wine proxies that I mentioned. So the supply itself at the same time was proliferating and becoming higher quality. Of course, there's an aspect of people seeing the demand and then deciding to create beverage brands in this space, and that becomes a bit of a loop there. But I'm also excited, outside of the revisiting of drinking habits, I'm just excited from a craft perspective, from a food technology perspective, all of the amazing things that are happening to create just products that are a level of quality that we couldn't have imagined a few years ago, I think with the key exception of Seedlip, which was one of the, I would say, most important brands that kicked this off almost 10 years ago now.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, one of the cool things that I didn't mention is that you deliver alcohol, non-alcoholic insights, news, and recommendations to over 5 million people annually. I'm really curious, in any of those insights or the work that you've done, has there been a willingness from the alcohol industry to enter into this? Has there been resistance? Is it mostly craft? Do you think it's going to, you know, get overtaken by big money? I'm really curious if there's any insight on that.
That's a great question. And it's a hot topic right now in the alcohol alternatives community. For example, Anheuser-Busch has committed that 20% of its portfolio is going to be non-alc within a certain period of time, the next few years. You see Diageo as a large alcohol company making similar commitments and in their investor documents, making it very clear that non-alcoholic is a focus for them going forward. It's, to me, I think a good thing that the big alcohol companies are paying attention for two reasons. Number one, you have to imagine that these companies have huge resources in terms of market research and strategy. The fact that they're entering the space to me shows that it's not a passing fad. It's a long-standing consumership that's here to stay. And then number two, with those budgets and resources, they are really able to normalize non-alcoholic options way faster than the small brands might. So for example, you see Heineken is putting a quarter of its global advertising budget into its 0.0 offering. You see huge campaigns behind Diageo's Captain Morgan non-alc version. Pernod Ricard just launched a Beefeater 0.0, and they opened a dedicated facility in 2022 to creating non-alcoholic spirits. So you have to imagine that they're going to be expanding. And these companies are also investing in the smaller non-alcoholic options, which I think is great to see as well in terms of an allocation of capital toward something good. So the big players are coming in. I think one criticism for the big players is potentially on the quality front. I think, you know, as with anything, you've got to try it for yourself and see if you like it. At the same time, I think there are some brands that are just objectively taking a more thoughtful approach to formulation than others. So I would say just because it has a big brand behind it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to love it. Among our Dry Atlas readers, though, they do love Guinness Zero. They love Heineken Zero. I personally think Peroni Zero is one of the non-alcoholic beers that tastes most like its alcoholic variant. So I, as a consumer, am happy to see that big alcohol is getting into this space. I am obviously, though, as someone who is a mom and pop retailer, works a lot with the smaller brands, I'm a champion of the smaller brands, and I'm really excited between our work at Spirited Away and our work at Dry Atlas to help elevate those smaller brands that, you know, don't have the money to be sponsoring huge athletes or have their logo on a soccer field, et cetera, as we see with the bigger players.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the little guy, but at the same time, and I wrote about this in my book, is that they are masters at persuasion and masters at mass marketing. And it's not just throwing a sign up or a TV commercial. It's in everything you do. It's attaching their marketing to things like nostalgia, that sitting on a curb with your dad is better with a beer, or, you know, obviously sitting at a beach, everybody now thinks that they have to have a drink next to it to actually make it a photo moment. So I think that that's the positive, I guess, to use it in the more ethical terms, not that necessarily that's what's driving them. But I think educating them, more people to be able to see, hey, this is like, you can actually go out and have fun and have these drinks and like have a great time. And it's really not about the drink. It's about the people connection anyways. And I think a lot of people here understand that. I'm curious on all those insights. Is there, or just all the touch points that you have in this industry, is there like one favorite NA story from 2023 that just like caught your eye or that you remember, or like an interesting insight, something like that?
From an industry perspective or more a consumer perspective?
Well, it could be either.
I'm trying to think. There was, I track so much news every week, and it's sometimes my head is spinning trying to keep track of what happened when. I think from an industry perspective, the story that has really excited me the most is just to see Athletic Brewing as a non-alcoholic beer brand just do so well and grow so quickly. I just read that in Whole Foods, Athletic Beer is the top selling beer, including among alcoholic options.
Wow.
And as mentioned, I think beer is a really accessible category. It's one people understand well. So I think if someone's going to understand that drinking can also just be about the ritual and not necessarily the alcohol content, I think people like Athletic are doing a really good job of opening those doors for consumers. So I'm excited to see that. on a much more niche level, I was really excited to see Ben Branson, who's the founder of Seedlip. He just launched a bitters brand called Season, and I interviewed about him about that a few weeks ago. First of all, I love to see that Ben Branson, as an entrepreneur who sold a majority stake of Seedlip to Diageo, is still in the non-alc game. He's still excited about this space. I love to see that bitters as a really niche category is getting a little bit more attention. As I mentioned, it's one that I think is a really versatile product for people to use in cocktails. It's a great product for people to bring with them to slip into a seltzer if they're out somewhere with no good options. So I love to see that on the more niche end of the spectrum. And then overall, I would say last year in particular, just seeing from research companies like Nielsen, the increased interest in non-alcoholic options and the kind of revisiting of the role of alcohol in people's lives. Every time new statistics came out, it was just more and more in support of the idea that non-alcoholic options are being normalized. I think one great example is Nielsen, which tracks of non-alc buyers, how many also drink alcohol. And when I first started watching that number about 2 years ago, it was 70% of non-alc spirits, wines, beers buyers also drank alcohol. The latest figure from Nielsen is 94%. Wow. So that's really showing that this category is not just for people who are strictly sober, or not just for people who even consider themselves probably mindful drinkers, but it's really permeated consumer attention to the point where if you're at a Whole Foods, you'll probably out of curiosity pick up that Athletic Brewing case just to try it. And I think that's really how this category is going to continue to expand and mature.
Yeah, that was one question that I kind of skipped over, which was, do you have like anecdotal feedback on that? I mean, the numbers are insanely convincing, but you know, obviously you have people walking in to your shop, you know, do they share that, oh, I only drink NA, or like, you know, is there like sort of a pattern that you recognize by the people that come in?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think we get a lot of cool insights just being a retailer and being on the ground in addition to what we do with Dry Atlas. I remember in the very early days of Spirited Away, before we even had hired any store associates, I was covering the store for a couple hours on the weekend to give my husband a break, because he was really 24/7 in those days. And I remember a man in his early 20s walked in, I think assuming that it was just a bottle shop, quickly realized that this was not alcoholic liquor, kind of stared at me point blank and said, you know, this is non-alcoholic. I said, yes, everything in here is non-alcoholic. He says, then what's the point? And turns on his heels and leaves. And I thought, okay, that's probably not going to be a returning customer for us. Certainly, you saw a lot of that 4 years ago, especially.
Yeah, that was like that's more of something that you would hear, you know, 5 years ago or more. I think that's less and less. I mean, people still like to joke about it, but I really think that narrative is phasing out.
For sure. And that's exactly what I was about to say. We've seen, even in the last 3 or 4 years, a huge shift in that kind of attitude. I remember early on as well, we were lucky enough to be featured in a Wall Street Journal article, which when you're 2 weeks old as a small business is just the dream. But I had to tell my husband, do not read these comments on wallstreetjournal.com, because it was, I wouldn't say vitriol, but it was a lot of people saying, you know, this business will never last. This is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And then, of course, if you've been tracking the non-alc space since then, non-alcoholic bottle shops have opened across the country. And, you know, we weren't the only ones to think that it was a good idea. You saw the same thing, for example, in our TikTok comments. Our first video that went viral having to do with the store had just a lot of people really negative on the concept of our business, and as well negative on the concept just of non-alc spirits, wines, and beers. It's a lot different today. And it's funny when you look at the TikTok comments, for example, of a video today, yes, there will still be the people scratching their head or even the detractors, but at the same time, other people are jumping in the comments saying, well, have you actually tried any of these? such and such is actually pretty good, or check out the Heineken 0.0. So you now have more of a discussion happening in places like that. And back to the store, the people who come into Spirited Away, it's typically that they have some baseline familiarity now with the space, and they're just looking to be guided to options that they're going to love, as opposed to needing to be educated on the space overall, which was certainly a lot of what we were doing at Spirited Away back in 2020.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've noticed it. I know in writing my book, you know, when I thought about, do I want to include a chapter about how to deal with rejection, like people trying to push you to drink, or how do you like answer that I'm not drinking? And I just decided that first of all, you have to build up the confidence and feel confident in it. So it needs to come from within. And I don't think just deflecting is really a good answer. But I also think that this notion that, oh, they don't drink, they must have a problem, is phasing away. I also think that people are accepting, like, they're taking a step away from alcohol, and that's okay, and people don't question it. So that cognitive dissonance that used to be there, where people would feel bad if you weren't drinking about themselves, and so they try to get you to join their tribe, or there's a couple other different layers of that. I think that that's really phasing out, and I think you're echoing that with kind of, you know, since when you first started and where you are now. And another thing that you mentioned is that, like, technology is part of what you think started it. I think technology, obviously being here on Sunnyside, can also be part of the solution. So I'd love to get your feedback on, like, what role does products like Sunnyside have in this mindful drinking movement?
Sure. I'm a huge fan of using data to support your goals. I feel like a lot of people with resolutions, for example, will make kind of sweeping claims about what they will or will not do without actually having a plan as to how they'll get there. So I love things that help you quantify what you're trying to do. You know, for me, as I mentioned, I do a little bit more of a low-tech approach with my mental checklist of, do I want to have a drink today or not? I think for someone who wants to, I think, make a more lasting change over time, quantifying is the way to go. And I also have been a fan from afar of Sunnyside, because I think the all or nothing mindset can be really intimidating for people and also set them up to fail. For example, Dry January is a huge theme in our industry. For those who aren't familiar, it's when people commit to ceasing all alcohol consumption for the month of January. And actually, if you look at anything that Spirited Away or Dry Atlas has put out in terms of content or communications, we don't really remark on that at all. Because for us, the exciting thing about this category is how to integrate it into your everyday life, not just as a challenge that you're going to make for yourself. So whether you're tracking your sleep with your Oura Ring or your Whoop, or you're using an app like Sunnyside, I think the most important thing is having a quantifiable way to track, are you making a long-term change for yourself that you can actually sustain over time? And I'm no habit expert, but I do strongly believe that from the non-alc beverage perspective, having those options on hand, having them in your fridge, or just having a game plan for what you're going to order when you're out, that I think just increases your success of reaching your mindful drinking goals, which was supported by an interesting research study that I just read out of Japan, which actually studied what is the effect of availability of non-alcoholic options on drinking levels. And they found, as a result of that study, that participants who had been moderate drinkers before, participants who were given for free a fridge full of non-alc options for the duration of the study, had significantly lower rates of drinking than those who were just trying to moderate without any other options available to them. So for habit change, I think it's, as you mentioned, looking at what are the rituals and what are the things you're doing every day, and how can you make a different choice if that's what you're looking to do, and really preparing ahead of time. So stocking your bar cart, stocking your fridge with options that are going to be able to plug into what you're already doing so that you can have that longer term change you're looking for.
Yes, you're speaking my language. I mean, it's a few things. It's planning, but then also knowing that it's it's not an all or nothing scenario. There are ways to do it. And a big part of it is goal setting, planning ahead of time, and then sticking to that plan and having a way to track it and keep yourself accountable either to yourself or with others. And I think technology brings us together beautifully in ways that maybe we would feel disconnected or we're doing this on our own, which I think is one of the beautiful things about Sunnyside is having that community, knowing that there's other people out there that are probably at a bar and just they have a soda water and lime, or they're just saying, no, that's okay. Today's a dry day or I'm not drinking right now. Which brings me into another question, because you do all this travel, you're going through Europe, you're going through Asia, and I feel like the perspective, the American perspective is the American perspective, and that the global perspective on how they view alcohol can vary very much by not only by continent, by country. What are the like kind of the global attitudes that you've experienced that are like really like stand out to you?
Mm-hmm. I would say in Europe, the first thing I noticed was how integrated non-alc options were on menus. Particularly non-alcoholic beers.
Yes.
And in Portugal, for example, the big Portuguese beer brands have been producing non-alc variants since the early 2000s. So
can I say something real quick? The funny thing is that so about 8 years ago, I lived in Spain, and I remember going to the store, and they had, you know, 24 packs of the non-alcoholic beer. And I was that guy that walked into the shop and thought to myself, what's the point?
Yeah.
So yes, I definitely noticed that. You really sparked a memory in my mind.
That completely aligns with what I was seeing across Europe. And it was interesting to me because you think about a lot of European cultures and you think about, you know, wine in France, or it's all about aperitifs in Italy. And I feel like there certainly is obviously a very prevalent social drinking culture, but at the same time, it's not this kind of black and white approach to it that I think we have here in America. And I think there's probably a few reasons why America's different in that respect. But what I love to see a lot of in Europe as well is lower ABV drinks, and which of course are permeating the American market in the last 5 to 10 years with, you know, the prevalence of spritzes, for example. But I love to see just the optionality throughout Europe. And one country that really stood out to me was Denmark, for two reasons. Number one, the food and beverage innovation in Denmark is on another level. I think a lot of people are familiar with the really fine dining restaurants that come out of that area. But number two, specifically for a cocktail bar I went to in Copenhagen called Bird, which organized its menu by no, low, and high proof, just three sections like that, with an equal amount of cocktails within each section. And it was all there, equally weighted. Nothing about choosing a low or no proof option would make you feel like it's the secondary choice or it's the lame choice. So I just love to see that integration too, and even how these options are being presented. And what I also loved about Europe is obviously just a higher appreciation for leisure than I think we have in America, and a higher appreciation for taste in food and beverage. So, you know, when I was choosing to have an alcoholic cocktail or with people who were, people were, I think, comparatively immersed in the experience and really enjoying it in a way that I don't feel in America for the most part. So that was Europe. I would say Asia was a very different kind of set of surprises to me. And it would be hard to generalize the entire area, but I will say on a country by country basis, for example, Japan, which I think many people associate with heavy drinking. We see they've got a very intense work culture. The so-called salary men are work hard, play hard. They're going to the karaoke bars late at night. I was shocked then when I stepped foot in Tokyo to see in the grocery stores how many non-alcoholic options there were, from Suntory and Asahi, which are two of the biggest companies there, just so many no and low ABV options at every turn. And Douglas and I were just so pleased to see that in a country where we kind of expected it would be fewer and farther between. But then at the same time, you look at a place like Hong Kong, for example, where we spent a few weeks, it's very much still an alcohol culture, relatively fewer options. some budding brands and budding booze free bottle shops there. But I think it's going to be a long time before Hong Kong feels like New York, for example. So it's just been great to see the different approaches worldwide from the consumer perspective, the different ways that the brands are approaching what they're doing, and really to explore and kind of revisit consumption culture in general in America, and how can we draw from the positives of how things are enjoyed, whether in Europe or Asia.
Amazing. Yeah, I would think also on the karaoke bar thing and the things that I've seen on TV that are usually kind of like concentrated on that, probably because it makes for better entertainment. I'm curious, how many countries have you gone to, and what's the goal?
I should probably know the exact count on countries. I would say it's at least 15. And the goal with this year abroad was to just explore the best in non-alcoholic beverages abroad and explore drinking culture abroad. So, in each country, if there's a brand that's based there, we made sure to meet with them. We were so fortunate to be taken to the production facilities of a lot of these brands. One that stood out to me, again, in Denmark was the production facility for a wine proxy brand called Murray, which just has some of the kind of craziest scientist vibe type people in this kind of far-flung production facility in this kind of shipping yard area, smoking rhubarb and really combining ingredients that I'd never heard of before, to be on the ground like that and see all of the effort that goes behind so many of these options was wonderful. And then, for example, when we were in Amsterdam, we met with Lucas Bols, which for Americans who might not know, Lucas Bols is the oldest cocktail company in the world. It's almost 500 years old. And they recently acquired a non-alcoholic spirits brand, and they, in their own portfolio, are launching non-alcoholic versions of their traditional spirits. So it was great to learn more about the history of this century-old cocktail company, meet with its executives, and understand how, after 500 years of producing alcoholic beverages, they're starting to dip their toes into the non-alc space. That was pretty cool to see as well.
So when are they going to have a network TV show where you're going around the world showing everybody all these places that you're going?
Well, you'll have to help me pitch that, because I would definitely do another lap. There were things that we were so fortunate to have access to, and then at the same time, every time we left a country, we would get notes from brands saying, "Hey, we didn't know that you were here. You know, we want to show you this. Can we show you that?" So there's so much to explore. And then just as a consumer, I was recently speaking with the BBC about the trend of alcohol-free travel. You know, you don't have to be in this industry to explore and get exposure to awesome non-alcoholic options while you're abroad. So I would say for anyone who's considering trips abroad, or even within the States to different areas, there are non-alcoholic bars to explore, dedicated shops in different cities, and then so many options, you know, even on the airlines as you're going to and from, to have a non-alcoholic beer, you know, have a Best Day Brewing when you're on Alaska Airlines, or have an Athletic on JetBlue. For the casual traveler, I think it's a really exciting time for non-alcoholic options as well.
That's great. I actually, it rolls me into another question. And where do you see, if you had a crystal ball, in the next 5 years? Because we've come a long way in the last 5 years, especially 10 years. But in the next 5, 10, maybe even 20 years, what does the future look like? Do the bars look different? Does the entire retail industry look different? Does even the social dynamic look different? I'm sure you've thought about some parts of these. Do you have any view of what the future might look like?
Sure. The main trend I'm tracking on this front is what I'm calling ABV optionality. So that ties to the concept of a flex drinker, which we've discussed in this podcast earlier. To me, the future is all about optionality. I think certainly there are going to be people who, for their own reasons, can't be touching any kind of alcohol. And fortunately for those folks, I think there are going to be even more 0.0 ABV options for them. to enjoy at home or out at bars and restaurants. I think for the mindful drinker consumers, the flex drinker consumers, what we'll see that they'll enjoy is just the more seamless integration of different cocktails and beverages at different ABV levels on a menu. So if, for example, Bird, the cocktail bar in Copenhagen, that approach of no, low, and high proof, I think we'll see more of that. When I was speaking with Ben Branson about what he's doing after Seedlip with his new brand Season, he was saying, hey, Season's alcohol free, but we don't lead with that in the communication about the brand. You'll see it's 0% ABV on the back. From his perspective, and he's, you know, been a pretty visionary guy in this space for a while, from his perspective, going forward, ABV becomes just a trait of the product that isn't going to define the whole product. So I think what we're going to be looking for as consumers are just great tasting beverages, and you're going to make the decision as to whether you want 0, 5 or 20% ABV, depending on what you're feeling. And then from the product side, I think we'll see more ABV optionality in how products are presented to consumers. A really great example of this is a seltzer brand called System Seltzers. I would consider them a hard seltzer brand, but their whole approach is this system, this multi-pack of seltzers at 8, 5, and 0% ABV. And they look quite similar. If you're enjoying them at a party, I don't think anyone's going to be flagging that you happen to now be drinking the 0% can when maybe you started with the 5 or 8, or you've been crushing the 0 all night. I think we'll see more of that as well from the product side. And my hope is that this concept of non-alcoholic beverages, I hope it doesn't become this binary thing of, I'm not touching alcohol, so I'll have these. I like to see from Nielsen and other research companies that it's more people deciding to moderate and be more flexible, because I don't think it's realistic that everybody is going to give up drinking cold turkey. But I do think for public health and individual health, it's a really wonderful thing that they have more options and that these options are being presented in a more normal and seamless way alongside alcoholic ones.
Yes, I 100% agree. Optionality is what I foresee as well. So I couldn't be more on the same page. I think I even take it a step further, and maybe you've thought about this. I talk a little bit about psychedelics. I'm a big advocate for psychedelic assisted therapy. I'm here in Boulder, and you know, where a lot of the ground zero is starting to happen on what's going to happen next for all the states in the US nationwide. And I could even foresee, you know, depending on how things go and what the legislation looks like, that even things like cannabis, THC, same with psilocybin, or maybe some other compounds where you could basically, you know, a la carte your drink in any kind of compound or psychotropic that you'd like. So I think that the future is going to look very different than it is now. That's what I'm thinking, and it sounds like you do too in many ways.
Certainly. And that's a trend I've been keeping a close eye on in terms of, if you think about true alcohol alternatives, you think about other state changing substances. And the latest data is showing that in states, for example, where cannabis is legalized, you see a pretty clearly tied reduction in alcohol consumption there. I think there are a lot of questions around causation versus correlation, but that's the initial data that I'm seeing. And then anecdotally, I'm speaking with brands who say, hey, we found a really surprising niche in the psychedelic community in California. And that's where we're selling best is kind of among people who are interested in what's the future of state change mentally, and is alcohol, you know, the technology, as it were, is alcohol the technology that I want to be using as an individual to feel differently? So it's something that I think, especially with legalization, we'll see put a lot more pressure on alcoholic brands. And for that reason, I'm personally very bullish on THC brands, for example, to be able to step in as a state changing alternative for people who are still looking for some kind of alternative buzz.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, this interview has been actually a lot of fun. It's been educational for me. You actually are kind of like on that side of the non-alcoholic that's like playful and fun and different products and different labels. So it was really good for you to come in and impart that knowledge with us. And so I want to thank you, first of all. And if anybody's listening and wants to reach out or you know, say thank you or even ask a question, is there a good place for them to reach out and do that?
Sure. They can find us on Instagram. Our handle is The Dry Atlas. So shoot us a DM. And also you can find us at dryatlas.com. That's where you can browse all our content, subscribe to our newsletter. And if you reply to our newsletter, I read and reply to every one that I receive.
I love it. Thank you so much, Victoria.
Thanks so much for having me.
This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform, having helped hundreds of thousands of people cut out more than 13 million drinks since 2020. And in fact, an independent study showed that Sunnyside reduced alcohol consumption by an average of 30% in 90 days. And as one of our members shared, Sunnyside helps me stay mindful of my drinking habits. It's not super restrictive, so if I'm craving a glass of wine with dinner, I just track it and I move on with my week. If you could benefit from drinking a bit less and being more mindful of when and how much you drink, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. You'll get access to everything that we offer, including tracking and planning tools, coaching from our experts, a vibrant community of people just like you, and the motivation and advice to stay on track with your health goals, all with no pressure to quit. That's sunnyside.co.